commitment encourages and inspires creativity. So I think if you commit either to the art or to the money, your brain, because you're an entrepreneur, is not going to allow you to stay in one or the other long enough to kill you.
I'm Alex Blumberg, host of the podcast Startup, and you're listening to We Are LA Tech.
We could not do this without the community believing in our vision together. We Are LA Tech is independently funded, funded by you, the community. So to support We Are LA Tech, go to patreon.com/WeAreLATech. That's patreon.com/WeAreLATech. Welcome back to the We Are LA Tech podcast. I am so excited to have one of my favorite YouTubers here, businessmen, digital friends now, IRL, Cody Warner. Am I even saying your last name right?
Yeah, I don't care how you say it. I'm just happy you're saying it. I'm super amped to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for making time. First of all, why are you in LA?
I'm in LA because there's this big thing that a couple big things that happened. And I just felt like, you know, like, my heart was calling, was telling me you must go out west now and like capitalize now. So
really?
I spent a whole week here. Yeah.
And so there was no like particular thing that was going on.
I mean, there was a lot of things that kind of all sort of came together. One of the biggest ones being a collab that I wanted to do with a channel that's up in Seattle, Metal for Breakfast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, that we had been talking about that for like 5 weeks and just like trying to plan it out. We thought about meeting in Utah. And finally, I was just like, look, Metal, now's the time. We got to do this. I'm just going to come to you. And yeah. So I kind of built it around that and another collab. But then, you know, besides those two things, I was just like, I have all of these people who have been with me from very early on. Yeah. And I just want to meet them and talk to them and
so
be with
rad.
Them and just hang out like in real life, you know?
So rad.
And this whole idea of from digital to real and just I've only ever talked to you in the comments. And now we're like having coffee. You know,
so
I just,
crazy.
I wanted it. Yeah.
It's so crazy. Okay. Let me give you guys context. So Cody is amazing. I think I came across Cody from like a Casey Neistat video. And so he was in the side thing on YouTube. And I'm like, this guy's rad. I love his energy. When I found out you were a skateboarder as well, I was like, yes, I'm on Team Cody. And then I've just been following his career so much. So I was so passionate about his videos that I posted on my personal Facebook, like, hey, you guys, let's get Cody up to 2,000 subscribers. And then all of a sudden, Cody does a collab with a major YouTuber and he's like surpassing 30,000. And this is just weeks later.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to have Cody on because of so many reasons. He's a creative talent. He's a businessman. He says he's a salesperson, which it trips me out because I don't like, yes, but no.
Yeah.
And I just want to ask you so many questions.
Cool.
First of all, why don't you give everybody context because they don't know what I know. So tell us, why'd you start a vlog?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is your vlog about?
Mm-hmm.
Like business context, like who are you quickly?
Yeah. Quickly. So I'm an entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur for my whole life, but really broke out into, you know, making money by myself for myself about 6 years ago. 5 years ago, started a business with two partners in video production. We kind of built and grew that in slightly different directions. First wedding video, and then pivoted hard to commercial video. And now still primarily commercial, but have a new wedding brand. And so on the career side, that's where, you know, that's where I make my money. But on the vlog side, on the YouTube side, it's about encouragement for me. So like I've always gotten life, like been given life by encouraging other people.
Right.
When I meet them, I want to try to draw out of them what is the thing that you need and I want to give it to you. And I've realized YouTube is a fantastic platform to be able to do that at scale. And so 2 years ago, I had seen a Casey Neistat vlog.
Yeah.
And in this vlog, it was the first time I had seen the format.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's awesome.
Right.
I have the personality to do that and the technical ability to do it. And I was like, I should do it.
Yeah.
I sat on it. I talked about it with Amber, my wife, for, you know, I think we had 4 or 5 conversations over the course of a year and a half.
Right.
And she's like, you know, we would always come down on it's not the right time. It's not the right time. Well,
because you have 2 kids as well.
I have 2 kids. Yeah. And at that time we had already had our first baby. And so at the end of 2017, yeah. I was reading a sales book.
Yeah.
And in the sales book, a guy named Grant Cardone said, if there's something that you've been thinking about doing that you know you need to do,
yeah.
you got to stop thinking about it and do it.
Yeah.
You're just wasting too much energy thinking yeah. about stuff. And immediately the vlog popped into my head and I came home to Amber that night. I'm like, I want to revisit this idea yeah. of the vlog. She's like, I think it's the time, you know, I think you're in, you've been talking about this for a year and a half. Like, I think this is for you. I tested it out shortly thereafter. I went and grabbed some beer for a New Year's Eve party and like made sure I could talk to a camera in public and not faint. and I could, and I'm yeah. like, well, now we're doing this. So January 1, 2018, I started recording myself in public, making vids, trying to encourage people. It started out as entrepreneurs and, creators.
Right.
That was kind of the target. And then at some point I kind of broadened it, but maybe more sharply defined it as the doers. I'm trying to encourage people who are trying to do stuff to get it done.
I love it. I love it so much. Okay. I love it so much that I wanted you being here in LA on an LA tech podcast.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck the tech.
It's
fuck that you're
my
not
mind.
From LA.
Yeah.
Like, I think your message is really important to share, but
thank
I think
you.
Who you are and how you show up in the world is even more important to share, not just the message that you're putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love this episode to be about who are you and how do you see the world? Because there's some things about you that really trip me out and it's hard to wrap my brain around.
Yeah.
And I think they're a key component in creating the amazing quality content that you create.
Okay.
But I can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Like on day one, you're a businessman.
Right.
You're a salesperson, which means you understand ROI,
right.
money.
Right.
Making sure that your time is invested well.
Mm-hmm.
On day one, what was your goal of the vlog? Because your vlog is so pure and so artistic and hippie.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the ROI?
Right.
Like on day one, not knowing if it's going to work or not.
So, you know, I'm a disciple of Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, we all need to be thinking about what's the long play, what should we be investing time in, even if there is no immediate ROI?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
jabs, you know, jab, 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 jab.
Yeah.
And so that when it started out, I didn't have, I think a big, and this is kind of just coming to me now. I think a big piece of it was in my career, I had almost completely stopped creating for clients.
Okay.
I was just selling. I was just pitching projects. I was an idea person. I was selling ideas. And as fulfilling as that was and still is for me, I wanted to be able to like get my hands on something that I could control and create.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
So it was more of a passion for me to be able to do something that I really felt strongly about, creation and encouragement, than anything. I mean, that said, people will think, no, you're just trying to make money. Yeah, I understood that it was going to work as a fantastic marketing tool, just positioning me as an expert, even within my local area. As this guy's on YouTube, he makes daily content that he must be a good person to work with.
Right.
So that was in my head.
Yeah.
But it really started out as a passion project of like, this is something I want. I feel fulfilled in doing this.
Yeah. When I first started watching your videos and you were around hanging around the 1,000 subscriber count, I was like, oh, this guy's smart. He has a video company. I didn't know that right away. But when I heard that, I was like, yeah, now people can get a sampling of his work to feel more comfortable hiring him.
Uh-huh.
So that's where it made sense. But then as your videos have gone on, you've created the No Small Creator movement.
Yeah.
And you really talk about how the creation itself is huge, is massive. Don't worry about how much money you make. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You're a sale? What?
Right, right.
I don't get it.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. I think, what is it? It's like so often when you get the cart before the horse, when your motives are wrong, people can just see right through it. And they know you're in this for the wrong reasons. I'm not going to give you my money, right? So if my whole theory of selling, of sales, is I love sales. I love being a salesman. I love selling.
Yeah.
I love pitching. I love selling people on an idea.
Yeah.
In like a pure way.
Yeah.
Not in a manipulative whatever way.
Totally.
In a way that's like, this is what's actually good for you. I'm going to convince you that it is.
Yeah.
And you're going to give me your money because it's actually what's best for you. The ROI on this is going to be good for you.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with No Small Creator and with encouraging Don't get me wrong. Like, I want everybody to make a lot of money. And I think there's a lot of money to be made in this kind of video marketing age that we live in.
Right.
It's just, if that's your motive, you can get off course a lot quicker than if your motive is, I'm just going to make sick stuff.
So, okay, here's where I'm coming from. Like, on a recent video, you were having a call with your wife, and you didn't talk about what it was about specifically, but you were saying we were talking about financial stuff.
Right.
Right after that, I think, is when YouTube featured you as a trending creator or like creator on the rise and all this stuff. And I was like, I wonder what's going on the reel. Like, it's really exciting that you're creator on the rise. As far as I know from my past history with YouTube, you're not making much money at 30,000 subs.
No money. Like, I'm making zero money.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, and you don't have any brand deals or anything like that, at least not yet. You have some, I think, in kind, like you did that underwear one. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, but that was for seven underwear. You can't eat those.
Really? But like, as an entrepreneur, I think sometimes it gets, no, I don't think I'm going to own it. Like, it gets really hard to stay true to our heart and create when we're feeling those days of desperation that I think are normal. How are we going to pay the rent? How are we going to pay for our team when we're lucky enough to have a team in the place? How are we going to pay those salaries and all this stuff? How do you stay so connected to the art when real life is still happening?
Yeah. So I mean, I'm just going to be straight with you. I do not have good answers for these questions. I'm serious. Yeah. So we, at the beginning of this year, we had to do, and you probably saw this vlog actually. We had to do something really hard. We had to let two of our team members go.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Because we didn't have the money to pay them. In fact, we didn't have the money to pay them for the previous 2 months that we had been paying them. We went into an incredible amount of debt just to pay their, to pay their salaries. Yeah. And, you know, so it was a huge mistake. We should have just had the hard conversation 2 months prior.
Right.
So we had to let them go. And then, you know, there's debt on the business side. There's debt on the personal side. Yeah. Money is just such a necessity. We all need money to do good stuff.
Yeah.
Like money, again, I don't think money is evil. Why I want everybody to have it. I think it is a foundation to kind of launch from. So I kind of see it as a pendulum or, you know, a mountaintop where say you're on top of the mountain. That's when you're like in this amazing kind of bullseye good zone of like, you know, your balance between making money and doing it for the art of it is like right in line. Everything feels good. And then, you know, on the one side of the mountain is you're just doing it for the art and you have no idea how the money's going to work. Yeah. And on the other side is you're just doing it for the money and you have no idea how the art's going to work.
Yeah.
You're just like, I'm selling out. Like, I'm just trying to make money. I'm trying to put food on the table.
Yeah.
You're going to be up and down and in and out and swinging back and forth between those your whole life. Like, that's just how it is as an entrepreneur. Yeah. That's how it's been for me.
Yeah.
So if you find yourself in the, I feel like I'm selling out, I'm just doing these cookie, for us, it's video. I'm just doing these cookie cutter videos. They're all the same. Everybody just wants an About Us video on their About Us page on their website. And I hate them. Yeah. And what's creative about this? That's fine. Yeah. That is fine. Keep doing it. Keep grinding at that for 10 years. Yeah. You know, that's okay. Yeah. But because we are entrepreneurs, because our brains don't allow us to stay idle in one spot.
Yeah.
For, you know, when it's not perfect, we're going to iterate to figuring out how to make the money and serve the art and do it from a pure place quickly, you know, or if not quickly, then slowly, but it's going to happen. And as you're swinging back and forth, it's all good. It's all good.
I think it's a gift that you have. I mean, you think we're all capable of just jumping into that zone at any moment?
I think commitment encourages and inspires creativity. So I think if you commit either to the art or to the money, your brain, because you're an entrepreneur, is not going to allow you to stay in one or the other long enough to kill you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To kill you. So, and you know, maybe there's people out there who prove me wrong. Maybe people did die just like trying, they're just pursuing the art and they never figured out the money. But you know, it's also the books you're reading. It's the people you're around.
I don't, from day one of watching your videos, you embodied no small creator. You embodied huge.
Uh-huh.
Even though you didn't have subs, I felt like it wasn't in alignment with how huge your quality and your art and your message was. there is something so moving and captivating and motivating in that. And I would love somehow for us to be able to share for everybody listening right now, because building a tech company, building, you know, being a creator, period, is really hard. You're taking your imagination and you're doing your best to make it reality. Yeah. And we don't have a treasure map, but we all read the Gary Vaynerchuk books, the Tim Ferriss books, you know, the Sheryl Sandberg books, being like, okay, they have the map. If we just like do everything they did, like my big hero is Richard Branson. I'm like, if I just do everything Richard Branson did, you know?
Shoot, and, he's my hero too.
Right. So, so, but then it turns out that I've discovered is none of us have the treasure map. Like I've been lucky enough to make, you know, friends with some of these like influential people. I'm like, oh, like I can't do exactly what
There's
you
no
did.
One
I
way.
Have to find my own story. And that you embodied success when you didn't even, you embodied that you had millions of subscribers when you just had a grand.
Yeah.
I think that I'm like, how?
Yeah. This is, I love that. I, Esri, thank you so much. Like that means a lot to me. Because that's what I, that's how I felt, you know, from the beginning when I had 100, I started with 111 subscribers from college. They were completely inactive, but like it was 111. That's what my, took a screenshot of my channel,
that's
right?
Awesome.
And I felt like that doesn't matter. That number doesn't matter. You know, I've got millions and I'm going to make this for millions. I'm going to make this like millions of people are seeing it, because that was a driving force for me. Like I do. Although I don't think you should focus on the numbers, I create, I take action as though I have massive numbers. And I've always done that. So just the other day, here's a here's a way to kind of put some teeth to it. In the No Small Creator Facebook group, just the other day, one of the No Small Creators posted that she was thinking of maybe pushing her release date back just for this week. But she wasn't sure how to kind of communicate with her audience about it. And I think, you know, I think she has not that great of a following, maybe maybe just over 100 or something like that.
Right.
And she was like, you know, I don't have a big following. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I might just say nothing. No one's really ever going to notice. And in that, you know, like I had that little like that little twinge. Same little twinge that I had when I was making the video about small creator this, small creator that. And I was just like, why am I saying small creator? I don't even like that word. Why is that disgusting? And I went on a rant about it, and that's how No Small Creator was born. This little twinge I had when she said, you know, I don't have that big of an audience. To me, I decided early on, without maybe knowing it, you know, if I wouldn't do it in front of 2 million people, I'm not going to do it in front of 2 people.
Right.
I realized it doesn't matter the size of my audience. I'm going to treat it like it's massive. And so it just, for, I posted that to her. I was like, you know, you said you don't have that big of an audience, but if you're saying when you get to 60,000 subscribers, you wouldn't push your, you wouldn't push it. You got to treat your two people like they're 60,000 because people are valuable. You know, your audience is valuable. You got to treat them, you got to treat them like they are what they are. It's not, you're not doing anything weird. They're just very valuable. They're giving you their time. So I've always kind of had this understanding of it doesn't matter the size of your audience. You got to give it 100% of yourself, or else what are you doing? Why are, so Peter McKinnon is the, is the one who did the collaboration with me. I, at the time he had 2.2 million subscribers in Canada. I came up there, just, he made this fantastic, like, kind of like mini doc about No Small Creator and me. And one of the things that he says in that video is like, Cody has at this time less than 3,000 subscribers, but he's working harder than somebody who has 2 million.
I remember that.
And he's like, and that's just what I love about him. And it's just, it's funny to me because in a sense, like how would you ever get 2 million subscribers if you weren't working as hard as if you had 2 million subscribers?
Right.
You know, in a sense, when you have 2 million, you can work less hard. Like, I hope you don't. I hope I don't.
Yeah,
I hope I don't work less hard when I've got 2 million, right?
Yeah.
I hope I work even harder.
Yeah.
But in a sense, that would be the time to relax.
Yeah.
Now is the time to work like you've got 10 million, if that's what's driving you. So, that's just a funny, it's kind of a funny thing to say, is like, he works like he's got 2 million, but he's only got 3,000. In a sense, it's like, well, what other way to do it is there?
Yeah.
If I'm trying to grow, I need to be doing this, don't I? Can I work like I've got two? Like, who's gonna join me if I work like I've got two, quote unquote? again, I feel like two is incredibly powerful. So don't get me wrong. But that's this funny kind of paradox about the whole thing.
It's funny. It makes me think of, for a quick second, when I give speeches, I never care if there's one person in the room or thousands of people in the room, mm-hmm. because I care about even affecting one person's life positively.
Yes. Yes.
So I give the exact same energy. I may adapt and be more personable if there's only one person.
Yeah.
But I don't care. It doesn't matter. And I vibe that. But the one thing that I have going on that you don't seem to struggle with, mm-hmm. and maybe you do, or maybe you really just found you don't have it, is sometimes I feel like I'm not enough, or I don't value myself, or what I have isn't good enough, or mm-hmm. I struggle with charging for something because I'm so much of an artist. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have doubts?
Oh, I have doubts every day.
Because they don't show on the videos.
That's actually a flaw of mine, to not show my doubts enough, I think, then. So I try to at least, as often as possible, show myself failing, show myself getting embarrassed. And that's actually something I want to ask you about, a comment that you made on one of the videos, the kind of podcasty type thing we did. But to show me, so just the other day, for instance, we were driving to my niece's play and I was vlogging it. I was also editing my vlog while trying to vlog it.
Yeah.
And Amber was driving the car and the girls were in the back seat and they were hungry. It was lunchtime.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get this vlog finished before we went into the play, or else it was going to be even later than it was. And I was like, I'm doing this. I'm almost done. Amber asked me, can you feed the girls? Can you go back there and feed them? I'm like, I just need a half an hour more. And she's like, okay, it's fine. Like, they're fine.
Yeah.
So we get there and in the vlog, I say, Amber, I'm sorry I didn't feed the girls. And she kind of just gives me this face like,
I'm
sorry too. I'm sorry you did too. Was it easy for me to put that in there? Yeah. That failure of I'm failing as a father, mm-hmm. I'm failing as a husband. No, but I need to show people that I have doubts about my ability to be a good dad, a good vlogger, a good business person, and a good husband. Like, that's a lot. And I need... If I pretend like I'm good at all that stuff all the time, it's not encouraging anymore. It's actually discouraging because people just think, well, somehow he's doing it. There's no way I ever can.
Interesting.
So I made a commitment to myself that if I ever say in a vlog, I'm going to cut that. So sometimes I'm talking, I'm like, oh, I'm going to cut that.
Yeah.
I'll always put it in. I'll always put it in the vlog because if I'm embarrassed enough to say, I don't want to show this to somebody, that means I need to show it because that stuff is the stuff that we're all struggling with.
So interesting.
So I need to, if you're telling me you don't see enough doubt in there, that's a flaw of mine because I have doubts. I have doubts daily about, is this good enough? Are people going to like this? Daily.
I'm very surprised. So here's the thing. I was telling you before we started recording, I watched the 10 million subscriber with Casey Neistat.
Yeah,
he scored 10 million this week, I think.
Yeah.
And, he's saying that he hasn't been doing YouTube videos the last few days because he's having a personal challenge.
Right.
He's
made a massive personal issue.
Yeah,
right.
He's never talked about. A long time ago, PewDiePie made a video about how YouTubers aren't forthright with what they're going through. Casey made a video saying, I want to acknowledge this too. However, I consistently see in the major YouTubers that they're not showing their raw self. And I like to lead with my vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying, but mm-hmm. you're on my personal Facebook. You probably have seen some of the stuff that I'm just really raw. I do think sometimes potentially brands maybe may choose not to work with me because I'm so vulnerable.
Hmm.
And I see in successful YouTubers that they're not showing that. And I'm wondering, do audiences truly want vulnerability, or do they just want to get that caffeine boost of positivity and drive, mm-hmm. and that's what they're going to you for? Because mm-hmm. even in that moment with Amber, which I totally remember, mm-hmm. I did not receive it as completely negative. Mm-hmm. Because the consistency of your content is so uplifting,
mm-hmm.
the tone I received it as is kind of jest or acceptance.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see failure.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that your vlog should have failure. I'm just curious if it would make vlogs actually, or videos or content, unsuccessful
mm-hmm.
to incorporate that. It's a little confusing when everyone seems perfect.
Right. So I think we could potentially be undergoing a shift where vulnerability and authenticity in the real sense, actual authenticity
in
like a good way. You know, I know it's a buzzword right now, but is coming to the forefront. And, you know, the fact that Casey said, I'm going through this personal stuff. He didn't say what it was.
Yeah.
And like, I'm fine with that. Brene Brown, Daring Greatly. It's like, wait till you're through it to share vulnerability publicly because you don't want to be whatever. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with doing what you need to do personally to get it done.
Right.
But I think that brands,
businesses
actually are coming to a point where they're going to start embracing vulnerabilities much more.
That's
and
interesting.
I think that we on kind of the vlog side, the whatever we are, whatever this social media push is, are kind of leading that charge of like brands. We need to know that you are not flawless. You know, when why is it weird to us when a brand makes a massive mistake?
Yeah.
And like that isn't actually weird. It's run by people and people are are flawed. People are flawed. So I think that, or I would like to see us anyway, get to a place where vulnerability is what's expected and required even to be successful, both in business and in like kind of the influencer world.
So you say you do struggle with things like most humans supposedly do, but never show. How do you get past that? Like, what are some of the, I know you have this beautiful video about joy versus happiness, which I really resonated with. How do you, maybe you want to dip in what that means.
Sure.
How do you get past those moments where you're doubting yourself? Because truly you're inspiring online.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, God, this guy is somehow hacked not having any doubts.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So I think that you need to have a toolkit because no one thing is going to really like get you over the hurdle every single time.
Yeah.
So for me, one of the biggest ones is the commitment to what I said, the discipline that I'm going to upload a video every single day regardless. And so for me, when I'm doubting whether this vlog is a good one and whether people are going to like it or not, the commitment overrides my desire to like just not share it. Like I feel like I'd feel worse having failed myself and my own commitment to myself than having failed my audience and given them something that they don't really enjoy.
Right.
Right. So that's one. That's toolkit number one. The whole idea of joy versus happiness, you know, just that joy is a choice. Happiness is a feeling. So you don't always feel happy, but you can choose. Joy generally in my life comes from gratefulness. You can choose to focus on the things that you're grateful for in your life, even when you don't feel happy.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that I'm drinking water out of a glass is a big one that I always kind of come back. Like the simple things.
Yeah.
I'm breathing fresh air. I'm drinking water out of a glass. I was able to drive to work today.
Yeah.
I have numerous people who love me and would hug me and would come to me right now, my community. You know, when I start to think about those things, I get into a more serene state where I feel okay about myself and my life and realize, okay, none of this is as big of a deal as I'm making out to be. That's maybe tool number two. Tool number three for me is passion and purpose. So every time I pick up my camera, I feel like I'm picking up a vehicle that's delivering me to an audience who is looking to do something, who wants to do something big. And I truly believe that every person has something inside of them that really has the power to affect and change the world.
That's so rad.
Right? So so when I think about, like right now, I might be talking to one person who's going to get a small idea that's going to change something, that's going to change something, that's going to change the world. Yeah. I flip out. I get really excited about it. So the act of picking up my camera.
Yeah.
The purpose behind what I'm doing and the passion, like I truly found something that I believe I was meant to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when I pick up the camera, it's like, it's an actual chemical thing. I think like any habit where I feel this surge of, what I'm about to do could have impact.
Totally. Why do I picture Thor? Like, picking up the camera, like, I am Thor. So you talked about something that was difficult, and a lot of us have to go through as entrepreneurs when you had to let two of your teammates go, which is, you seem like a heart-driven leader, so that couldn't have been easy.
No, it was probably the hardest thing ever.
Harder for you than someone that isn't as emotionally connective.
Mm-hmm.
How do you pick yourself back up. How do you believe when you go through such struggle as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. So I'm just going to have to think specifically in that case. You know, I was really sad. I went home. I think I cried to my wife and I said, this is really hard. I didn't want to do this, that, you know, these are my family. This feels like family. Yeah. I feel like I let my family go. And, I think I called my sister, actually, my older sister, and she doesn't own a business, but she's a business person.
Yeah.
And, you know, she said, look, Cody, we're all making business decisions. Like, they were thinking about if this is what's right for them still or not too. And, even some of the things they sent when we had the conversation made me kind of think, oh, like maybe this is good.
Yeah.
You know, so kind of thinking about some of that stuff. But just time for me, it was time. It took me like a week to really get out of the funk of, I mean, the other thing is like my accountant was saying, oh, thank goodness you should have done that 2 months ago or 3 months ago or something.
Yeah.
You know, so knowing that it was the right decision in at least some way helped me, but it took just time to let that stuff sink in.
Totally.
And then, but then the choice to remain focused on the good that we're doing, the brands that we're helping, you know, our one employee that we kept. And the fact that they were able to now go out and do something different and new and trying to think about silver linings. You know, I'm an optimist, so I get there more naturally, but silver linings, I think, are the saving grace of every bad situation.
Yeah.
That said, the caveat being, I'm a huge advocate of feeling sad when you feel sad.
Interesting.
I think when you feel sad, you need to feel sad. Like maybe listen to some sad music or have a sad conversation with somebody.
I did a video about this. I forgot about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it was when my wife and kids went away to New York for like a weekend and I just got sad. And my first thought was like, I'll just throw myself into work and I'll get over this.
Yeah.
And then I realized, no, that's not what I like to do. I like, you know, I would encourage myself and everybody to feel sad first and then be around people and then remember some of those things, you know? So, when I was very young, my parents got divorced and I ended up living with my dad for most of my life.
Yeah.
I lived with my mom for a year, my mom and sister for a year, and then my dad for the rest of my life. And my dad would always say, when I was little, I was seven, before bed, like, Cody, is there anything you need to talk about? Because in our family, we don't hold things inside.
Yeah.
So now in adulthood, it feels like to hold something inside is to try to pretend we're happy or to try to feel happy when we're actually feeling sad. So feel your feelings and then make active choices to be able to get back to a feeling state that you'd prefer to be in.
Bringing it back full circle to business, since I know that that's where everybody gains value here, has the YouTube channel helped your business?
Yeah, it has. It really has. So locally.
And has it helped your business below 3,000 or only now that you're at a lot more subs?
Oh, no, it was below that it started helping. And it was right. It wasn't because of my audience. We haven't actually even figured out how to leverage my audience yet because my audience isn't local. You know, it's world, it's international.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, back in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, people are like, oh, Cody's a big deal. They don't even know.
Right.
So we haven't even figured out how to leverage it, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So, but it was back when it was below 3,000, just this idea of, you know, anytime there was something business related, I'd put it on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I'd try to show it to people in my network.
Right.
And they would say, you know, I'd get calls. I really like the video that you did. Can we talk about XYZ?
Yeah.
You know, so just creating conversations, opportunities to meet up.
Yeah.
But then also national organizations seeing a vlog and then doing some research on us and then reaching out and saying, hey, we have a project coming up in your, you know, in your area. Yeah. Would you give us a quote on it? In both ways, both directly from the vlog, but also kind of using the vlog as a marketing tool to be able to start a conversation and get in person with somebody.
Now, do you think a YouTube channel can help a business that's not video production?
I 100% do. I think, you know, there's obviously going to be, so it's interesting that you talked about video and like you seeing that I had a video production coming and saying, oh, that makes sense because this is kind of showcasing his work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people would want to work with him.
Yeah.
Actually, I had the opposite fear in the beginning that since I was doing vlog style stuff and my video production is, company is highly produced stuff.
Yeah.
That people would think, oh, they don't do the kind of work that we want them to do. Like they do vloggy stuff and we want something highly produced for TV. And a lot of my friends and peers are just like, no, like people are smart enough to understand vlog style is a different type of video than highly produced.
Right.
And that does seem to have been the case. You know, people will see a vlog, but they'll click into our portfolio on our website and see, oh, okay, they make TV commercials.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an issue, but for that reason, I think that if you're not in video, if you're completely outside of even like media, I think that having a vlog, having a YouTube channel is a great way to show your expertise in your market.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, if you do textiles and like every, you know, weekly, you're like dissecting a new textile and you're like, and this is why this one's good and this is why this one's bad and this distributor, people aren't getting caught up on, is this a good video or a bad video? Yeah. They're just thinking about you as an expert or not.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a fan, you know, get your phone out, make a YouTube channel with your phone.
So that's an interesting thing about good video or not video. And you also commenting that you're in your video production company, it's highly produced, as though your vlog is not highly produced. Your vlog is highly produced. It sounds like you don't sleep. Before we wrap up, I want to dive into like the production side of it. How do you manage your time? How do you plan out your vlogs? The question that interests me most regarding how you plan out your vlogs, how do you plan out your vlogs so that they have impact every day? Like, how do you think about the message? And you talked about this a little bit on one of your vlogs when you didn't know it was like a creative free flow and you don't know what the message was going to be by the end of the day.
Right.
But what's that look like?
So I have an understanding of this now just because I get this question so often from you know, other creators.
Yeah.
But, you know, it took me a while to really figure out how I do ideas. Generally, I'd say 99% of the time, the idea for the day's vlog comes to me on the day of that vlog before 10 a.m. So a new idea every day before 10 a.m. that's fresh to that day. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it comes from noticing what's going on around me and my surroundings. Because I have ADHD, I notice a lot. I notice everything. And so, you know, I'm making connections between things that maybe other people aren't connecting. And then that's giving me good ideas.
Right.
That continues to happen throughout the whole day. So as that happens, but I'm, you know, I'm working on one idea for a vlog as it's happening, I'm getting another idea for another vlog. So I'll always write those ideas down. So right now I have a list, I think of 200 and I think it's at 262 vlog ideas that I've never done. That's just in my pocket on my phone on Evernote. And I think having that list to fall back on frees my mind up to be, to have a new idea or 10 every day, because I know like I'm not concerned about having an idea. I'm just looking, I'm just open to them. Right.
Yeah.
So I do think there's something, there is something kind of special or different about me because I have ADHD and I get so many ideas just naturally.
Yeah.
But that said, having that kind of pillow to fall back on of if there ever is ever a day that it's, you know, 3 p.m. and I'm like, I still don't know what today's vlog's about. I can pull something up and be like, all right, you know, this idea, I'll do this one.
Yeah, but you have the idea, but then how do you know? And maybe this is just the talent of being a videographer. How do you know what to shoot to tell that story?
Yeah. So that's why I love it. It helps me to draw meaning from my life because the fact of the matter is, as we go on, as we go about our days, especially as entrepreneurs, like we have the luxury of not just only sitting in offices all day. We're taking meetings, we're going places.
Yeah.
We can draw meaning, which is basically what storytelling is.
Right.
We can draw meaning out of every single day.
Yeah.
It's there. It's just a matter of finding it and then choosing what pieces of it you're going to use to tell.
That's great. So I wonder if I had like a journal, like a meaning journal
where
I would like dot, I would truly reflect and maybe it's just one sentence.
Yep.
Even if I was totally tired, I just wrote the one word or one sentence that day meant to me.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, so that would be like, that would be the topic.
Yeah.
But kind of the story then would be, what are the threads that I would have pulled from this day to be able to drive that topic, right?
Right. But how do you know when you're shooting? Like,
so
you said in one blog, I think you shoot like 2 hours.
About
of footage.
Two, maybe an hour and a half yeah. more. Right. So when I'm shooting, like if I'm shooting before 10 a.m., before I get the idea, I'm just kind of, you know, whatever is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm
and you're amazing at B-roll, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. Whatever's interesting, I'll be grabbing it. But then when I get the idea, at that point, I do start to think about, okay, what else is going to happen the rest of the day?
Yeah.
And that helps me to... It's really interesting. I just did this collaboration with these guys called Method Box, who are like geniuses when it comes to brands and like building. And they just texted me this morning and blew my mind. And they're like, it was really interesting to see how you vlog because it's different than what we thought. You were actually editing before, like you were editing before you even started shooting. You were thinking about what part of the day is going to drive my message. And then you would only start recording then, which then gives me less footage. So it's less editing. So I have more time to sleep. Right. So for them to say that and see that, I was like, that is what I do. But it's interesting that you called that editing because I just call that being selective with what I shoot.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, once I think about it and what else is going to happen, then I kind of know I have some indicators of, OK, I'll capture this. I'll capture this. Yeah. I'll do a little talking piece here. You know, this idea is about the free flow of thought and ideas. So I'll get some flowing water or like something that can visually represent that. And then, you know, oftentimes I'll go out of my way to go get some of those shots. Yeah. You know, I will have to go out and do something more creative instead of documentarian. But yeah, that's what it is for me.
Which is kind of exciting because it's like a little adventure.
Exactly.
You know, your process makes me think of something that came to mind only in the last couple of days. I've been wanting to simplify my life. My life is very complicated. Actually, I don't know if you're familiar with the business person Tucker Max. He's also an author. And I had the opportunity to learn from him. And he goes, Spree, you overcomplicate everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, let me just sit with that because I really respect you as a businessman. So I just want to like see if there's any truth to that.
Yeah.
And I started to ask myself, are the actions I'm taking each day, like everything that I have in my calendar, in alignment with the like 2 to 3 things I want out of my life?
Beautiful.
Adventure, purpose, connection. If I'm not feeling adventure, purpose, or connection, and maybe a state of ease, like, should I be doing that thing?
Wow.
Remember, I even told you the other day I was going to go to a movie.
Yeah.
And then I asked myself, is that contributing to adventure, connection? I'm like, no, because I was going to go by myself and it's just stressing me out to put something else in. Why do I need to go to this movie?
Why am I doing this?
Yeah. And so I feel like your editing process or your selection process is kind of like that. Like, is it in alignment with what I want out of my day and out of the message? And when do you sleep?
So I generally sleep from 11 p.m. to 3 or 4:30 a.m.
And is that comfortable for you or is that a sacrifice?
Oh, that's a huge sacrifice. I love sleep. In college, I slept 12 hours a day. I love sleep. So yeah, it's a massive sacrifice, but I just don't care. I feel like now's the time to capitalize. And if I have to give up sleep, I'm doing it.
I think you said you had a question that you wanted to ask me.
Right.
What was that?
Yeah. So the question is... So it's interesting. So I've been so cognizant of it this entire interview. I have a tendency, just as a human, I like to think it's not because I'm a man and you're a woman, but to cut in when people are talking, to like start talking over people. And so that's something that you commented on, one of Amber's and my coffee on the couch in the comments. You're like, Cody, I noticed, I don't know, you might have actually just messaged me. You might not have even done it publicly. You might have just messaged me and said, I noticed that.
Yeah.
Right. And another one of my female friends did the same exact thing. A private message, like unwilling to call me out in public, which anybody ever in the future feel 100% free to call me out in public. I think that everybody needs to be called to the carpet on stuff that they're doing wrong. Messaged me privately and said, I noticed that you talk over Amber a lot. Like you don't let her finish her... some of her thoughts and you kind of jump in. I just think it's something you need to think about. Like you're a role model. Just think about it, you know? And I just wanted to ask you about that in our interview now, this, what just happened, you know, like how many times did you notice, like, why is he talking right now when I'm talking? And then B, for you as a woman, as a startup, you know, what do we need to do as a society to put an end to the whole 80%, you know, in a meeting, 80% of the conversation is dominated by the man?
So two things. I do have an alternative viewpoint that I think most women don't share on the second question. But the first question, I actually noticed how you didn't cut me off. I not that I was thinking about it, but I was ready in case I needed to, if you were talking on a long tangent or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a panel moderator, like, you know,
yeah.
And you didn't do it once. So I was like, oh, that was really easy.
It was because I was thinking about it. I surely would have done it had I not been thinking about it.
You didn't do it once and I was like ready for it.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised.
Okay.
And I actually would have hoped that if I was not making sense or speaking in an way that's not very engaging, that you would cut me off, because I show up to this We Are LA Tech podcast for everyone listening right now. Like, when I look at the mic, like you look into your camera and you see millions of people, I see a mic, I see tons of my, you know, audio friends. I feel like I'm painting audio, and the last thing I want to do is waste anyone's time.
Yeah.
And so if I'm being boring, I would hope that you jump in because I could get scattered too.
Right.
Especially because I'm so excited, you know? So yeah, you didn't cut me off. And the thing about jumping in on Amber, it was more just, I don't think it was like a male-female thing. It was like allowing your wife a moment to share her thoughts, I guess. It wasn't a, like a aggressive
as male-female,
It was, allowing a moment. And I was like, oh, maybe they have an understanding in their relationship that I'm not aware of.
You said that even.
Yeah.
You even said that. Oh, you're like, I don't want to step on your toes. Like, I don't know your relationship.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking this.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciated.
But yeah, and then the to answer the second question.
Mm-hmm.
I hear this thing a lot, and for all of you that don't agree with me, this is just what I think.
Sorry.
I think, I think this thing a lot, that, or I hear this thing a lot, that we need to change how we are to make girls, I hear it a lot with like female hackathons, like young girls, make girls feel more comfortable in a hackathon. We need to be more cajoling. We need to be more soft and sensitive and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a huge influence in my upbringing, and the world doesn't, you know, change to what we want. We need to feel strong within ourselves, and we need to believe in ourselves. And I'm a podcaster, and my message amongst everything that I do as an artist is hoping to inspire people to believe in themselves. My Women in Tech podcast, the whole reason it exists is I want to show people examples of what's possible for them. And to start to adapt in order to make for a friendlier environment just for women, I don't think it's real. It's not reality. I'd much prefer our parents, our mentors, our society make us feel more confident as people, male or female. Just, I want to feel confidence. I want to feel enough. I ask myself all the time. This is interesting. This is something I've been dealing with. Unfortunately, really hardcore this week, but of course throughout my life, is this week I've been feeling a lot of I am not enough. And I'm like, where does that come from? Where did that start? And I'm pinpointing back, okay, that started as a kid. And now how am I seeing the world to match this negative belief system? How am I making it so when people see me, I'm translating into, oh, they must not think I'm enough, therefore I'm not enough. But it all started with me not thinking I'm enough. And the reason I pinpoint that is because it's not about being more cajoling to make someone feel comfortable, because if I felt confident and enough, you couldn't take me off my strength, because my power is from within. And I'd rather create an environment where we could all feel our own power within, whether it be male, female, whoever, than like pretending that we could change reality to match whatever insecurities we have all the time so we don't have them. I mean, it's just, it's not real.
It's not reality. It's not how it's going to happen. It's going to happen by empowering and raising. And I mean, and you're speaking to a man with two daughters.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, going back to your question, like, what do we do to make your exact question is, what do we do so that it's not 80-20 and men aren't over talking women? It's not adapting and changing the environment. I mean, maybe there's a conversation that could be had regarding that, but I think a more important conversation is building up ourselves and one another so that we feel strong and we feel the confidence to communicate our thoughts. We feel the security that if someone's not going to agree with us, it's still okay for us to speak. Like, it's more about coming from within, and then more women will speak up.
Regardless of gender, we'll just be having conversations.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's commit to changing it.
Yeah.
All right.
And so that's what you could do for your daughters. You could constantly tell your daughters, even the words, you are enough.
You are enough.
You are enough.
Yeah.
All the time. Like their whole upbringing. You are enough. Mm-hmm. You're enough. You are valuable. You're mm-hmm. awesome. You're mm-hmm. enough. You're enough. You're capable of accomplishing anything that you want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. You are enough.
So. Thank you for that. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome. So before we sign out, how can people uh-huh. reach you? Where can they find you on social?
Yeah. So on social, best place is YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube's where I'm at. It's my channel is youtube.com/rcodywanner. RCODYWANNER.
Perfect. And you guys, I hope you have loved this interview as much as I have loved being here. I feel that it's an absolute gift that I get to meet Cody in real life, that I got to discover him and I get to be a part of his journey while he's on his journey. It's just amazing to connect with other incredible people in the Los Angeles tech community. Remember, you could go to wearelatech.com/VIP. That's wearelatech.com/VIP. Remember, say hello on social at wearelatech on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. I will talk to you guys, see you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye. We Are LA Tech is independently funded by the community. We couldn't make this happen without your support. If you too want to contribute to We Are LA Tech and see us making the podcast, building the mobile apps, creating the events year after year, consider contributing at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/WeAreLATech. Thank you. We appreciate you.
My name's Cody Wanner. I have a company called Cap Collective Video Production. We do highly produced commercial video. Currently visiting Los Angeles from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and you're listening to We Are LA Tech.